ready for a fright? Can you handle a scare? This is your home for all things horror. Welcome to the Deadline Podcast with your host, Jay.
So today we're going to do something a little different. Not much off, but anyway, I wanted to cover this missing persons case that happened back in like 2006. But I don't know what made me decide to actually cover this. I just thought the story was interesting, and it was also kind of odd and weird what happened to this kid. So this is about the disappearance of Brian Schaefer. Now, the disappearance of Brian Schaefer is a very tragic case about an Ohio State University medical student that disappeared on April the 1st, 2006. Now, he was last seen on security camera near the entrance to a bar that recorded him briefly talking to two women just before 2 a.m. and then apparently re-entering the bar. Now, Schaefer has not been seen or heard from since. Now, Brian and his friends had went out for the night to celebrate the beginning of spring break. Later, he was separated from them, and they assumed he had gone back home. Now, during the time of this, they had apparently bar hopped through the entire night. But, now, Brian and his friends had went out for the night to, let's see, he was last seen at this bar, and like I said, I guess it was a whole strip of bars, so they just basically went up and down the street, and then the night was going to end back to where they were originally. Now, Schaefer's disappearance has been especially puzzling to investigators since there was no other publicly accessible entrance to the bar at that time. Columbus police have several theories about what happened. Now, some interest and suspicion has been directed at a friend of Schaefer's who accompanied him that night, but who has refused to take a lie detector test regarding the incident. Now, while foul play has been suspected, including the possible involvement of this purported smiley face serial killer, and that's a whole different other thing, and I might cover that later on, has also been speculated that he might be alive and living somewhere else under a new identity. Now, there's a lot of theories that he's actually still alive, and he basically just ran away. But the more I dug up on this case, as much as I could, it's kind of scarce. But anyway, I couldn't think of anything off the top of my head why he physically wouldn't want to do that. Because for the most part, he had something good going for him, and we'll get into that why I say that in a minute. But it just doesn't make sense. Now, unless he was hiding something. But anyway, so Schaefer grew up in Pickerington, Ohio. I don't know. I might have butchered that. Hopefully I said that right. A suburb of Columbus where Ohio State University, OSU, is located. He is the oldest of Randy and Renee Schaefer's two sons. Now, he graduated the local high school in 97 and went to OSU for his undergraduate work. 6 years later, he graduated with a degree of microbiology. Now, following that, he began studies at Ohio State University College of Medicine in 2004. Now, during his second year there, in March of 2006, his mother Renee died of myelodysplasia. And his friends say that although he appeared to be handling it well, her death was hard on him. Now, maybe that had something to do with it, but it gets a lot weirder. Now, at 9 p.m., Brian met a friend, William Florence, at the Ugly Tuna, a bar in South Campus Gateway Complex on High Street. Now, an hour later, Brian called his girlfriend, Alexis Wagner. She had returned to her home in Toledo to visit with her family before she and Brian were due to depart for Miami. So, see, him and his girl were actually about to leave to go on vacation. But here's the thing. Now, like I said, a lot of people speculated that he decided to leave, but it doesn't make sense because supposedly he was in the process of actually, you know, the girl, Wagner, he was really in love with her. And a lot of people said that, you know, he was on the verge of asking, you know, to marry. So it doesn't make sense, but a lot of people did speculate that for some reason. But anyway, now he and Florence went bar hopping, visiting several other drinking establishments and working their way down to the arena district. At each stop, the two had one shot each of hard liquor, according to Florence. Now after midnight, the two met Meredith Reed, a friend of Florence, in the Short North. She gave them a ride back to the Ugly Tuna, where they had started the night, and joined them for a last round. Now, while the three were there, Brian separated from his companions. Florence and Reed had been trying to find him, repeatedly calling him. They left with the other patrons when the bar closed at 2 a.m., waiting outside for Brian. And when he was not among the departing crowd, they assumed he had gone back to his apartment without letting them know. And I guess, even at that point, you know, when you're drunk, I guess they just speculated, okay, he went back. But even then, if he's fully drunk, especially after all the alcohol that it, if they actually did hard, you know, shots of hard liquor at every stop on that strip. Now, that's what they say, or his friend says, but either way, he'd been drunk as hell. But even then, why didn't, you know, cut him off at some point? Which didn't make sense. But anyway, now Wagner and Randy Schaefer both tried to call Brian later that weekend, but he didn't answer. On Monday morning, he missed the flight to Miami, he had with Wagner, which is his girlfriend, had scheduled long before. He was then reported missing to the Columbus police. Now, police started their investigation at the Ugly Tuna, seeing that this was the last place he was seen on security cameras. Now, they reviewed the footage, which showed Brian and Florence and Reed going up an escalator to the bar's main entrance at 1:15 a.m. Brian was seen outside of the bar around 1:55 a.m., talking briefly with two young women and saying goodbye, then moving off camera in the direction of the bar, apparently to re-enter. Now, the camera did not record him leaving shortly afterwards when the Ugly Tuna closed. That was the last time he was seen. Now, like I stated at the beginning, there was really only one entrance to the place that were for, you know, guests or whatever. Now, we'll get into this in a minute. There were some where I think a private investigator, PI, speculated that he thinks that Brian might have changed clothes and then went out the door. But here's the thing. They never said anything about, oh, he went into the bar with a book bag or a bag with clothes or a hand with, you know, he had clothes in his hand or anything. It didn't say anything like that. But this is just speculation that a PI said. Now, Wagner and Randy, I'm trying to remember where we were at. So, his dad called and filed a missing person, with the Columbus police. And then, which, I don't know what it is by law. I don't know if every state's different. I don't know how many days you have to be missing before you can actually file. Maybe, is it 24 hours, I guess? So, even then, that was over the weekend, and they called, what, 2 days later, 3 days later, whatever? Now, investigators speculated that he could have changed his clothes in the bar or put on a hat and kept his head down, hiding his face from the camera. Now, the cameras might also have missed him. One panned across the area constantly, and the other was operated manually. He might have also left the building by another route. However, the building's only other exit, a service door not generally used by the public, opened at the time onto a construction site that officers believed would have been difficult to walk through while sober, much less intoxicated, as Brian likely was at the time. So it shows that it shows right there, though, the only way is through that front door. And if they had two security cameras, one that panned by itself and the other was manually done, so he had to. Now, I'll get into what I think in a bit on that, but anyway, so let's continue into that. But now, police began to search outside of the Ugly Tuna after basically they couldn't come up with anything, looking closely in the street, inspecting dumpsters and other waste containers, and asking residents if they had seen him at all. Now, flyers, a bronze picture showing a tattoo on his upper right arm of a stick figure logo from the cover artwork for a single of Alive by Pearl Jam. Now, that was one of his favorite bands, and noting a distinctive flick in one of his irises were posted widely. The police even persuaded the city to let them into the sewer and search there. No useful information was uncovered. Now, at Brian's apartment on King Avenue, six blocks from the Ugly Tuna, his car was still parked outside. Inside, nothing appeared amiss. Now, after searching miles away from the bar in every direction, police began to consider other possibilities besides an accident or foul play. Since his mother had recently died from that, from the time that he went missing, it was speculated he had gone away temporarily to grieve in solitude. Yet his disappearance proved permanent. No evident reasons appeared for him voluntarily disappearing. Now, those who had seen Brian that evening, including his father, were asked to take a lie detector test. Reed and Randy Schaefer passed theirs, as did reportedly all the others, while Florence, which is the guy that he went to the bar with, refused to take it. So right there, that's a red flag. If you don't have anything to hide, okay, you shouldn't have any problem taking a test. Now, the two women Brian had last seen, remember me telling you that it showed him on the camera where he was briefly talking to these two women out front, which were later identified. They said in 2009 that they had never been asked to take one themselves. Wagner called Brian's phone every evening. Now, keep in mind, Wagner is his girlfriend. Before going to bed for a long time after the disappearance. So she called all the time, even after the disappearance. Usually it went to voicemail, but one night in September it actually rang three times. She stated, "I kept calling to hear it purely because it was one of the best sounds I'd ever heard, even if no one picked up." And that's what she wrote on MySpace. You guys remember that, though, MySpace? Way before Facebook was even existed. I kind of missed that. But anyway. Now, Singular, which, remember, back then, that was a thing, Singular. Brian's wireless provider said that Wagner heard may have been due to a computer glitch. A ping from the phone was detected at a cell tower in Hillard, 14 miles northwest of Columbus. Now, fast forward. In September 2008, during a heavy windstorm in central Ohio, Randy Schaefer, which is Brian's dad, was out in the yard of his Baltimore home clearing debris. A branch blew off from a nearby tree and fatally struck him. Neighbors found his body the next morning and called police. Now, and that's sad because the only person that's left in that family is his little brother. So, Brian is missing. The mom died of a disease. And dad died from a tree branch falling or whatever and killing him. So, the brother's by himself, which is extremely sad. Now, here's the fucked up part and the really weird part. Now, police said what I'm about to tell you in a minute, but the police said that it was all fake, and this part that I'm about to tell you is all fake, but I don't know, something just doesn't add up. But anyway, now after the obituary for his father ran online, a condolence book was posted. Now, that's a book where you can just post your name and, you know, post whatever you want to say about the family or whatever. Now, one of the signatures in it said, "To Dad, love, Brian." And then in parentheses, it said, "U.S. Virgin Islands." Now, this suggested that Brian might have left Columbus for a new life elsewhere. However, upon further investigation, the note was found to have been posted from a computer accessible to the public in Franklin County. It was determined to be a hoax. Okay. But they said it was a hoax, but they don't have any evidence. Maybe it was him. Maybe he had some kind of mental problem. You know, maybe he was very, very close with his mother, and maybe he did have to go away. A lot of things don't add up about it, though. And, you know, it just doesn't add up. You know, if he is, then why would he just poof disappear? Why couldn't he told his friends, or hell, his girlfriend that he was supposedly going to ask to marry? Why couldn't he have said, you know, I need some time to grieve or whatever? But also, he had this degree to be a doctor, so, I don't know. Now, shortly after Randy Schaefer's death, Neil Rosenberg, attorney for Clint Florence, wrote to Don Corbett, a PI, a private investigator, who has volunteered his time to help the Schaefer family find Brian, regarding his client's ongoing refusal to take the lie detector test. Rosenberg intimated that he had learned that Columbus police investigating the case believed Brian was still alive. In April 2009, The Lantern, Ohio State student newspaper, disclosed the exchange. "If Brian is alive, which is what I am led to believe, or after speaking with the detective involved, then it is Brian, and not Clint Florence, who is causing his family pain and hardship," Rosenberg wrote. Brian should come forward and end this. Florence, he said, did not have anything to hide. He had merely told everything he knew from the beginning and did not see the value of doing so again. But my thing is, if he told everything, supposedly, like he said here, then why couldn't he have taken a lie detector test? Everyone else took one, and they had no problem. So, I don't know. Something just doesn't add up with this. Is he hiding something? Did he kill him? You know, what was it? That story about that... I'm sure everyone's seen that video, that surveillance... of this Asian girl getting onto a elevator in a hotel, I think it was, and it shows her like kind of freaking out. Like she gets in the elevator and she kind of pokes her head out, and then she's like ducking back behind inside, and then she pokes her head back out, but then all of a sudden her body's found at the top of the hotel on the roof at entrance, and inside their water, whatever the hell it is, you know, their not water jar, water can, what the hell is it called, the thing that holds the water for the damn hotel anyway. And even the investigators were trying to figure out, because first of all she was too little, and they said that she would be too little to lift that up, and another thing is it was locked, so no one had no idea. So that's what it, this kind of reminded me of to a certain extent. Now, Rosenberg's assertions, notwithstanding, many of those who were close to Brian have criticized Florence for not being forthcoming enough about this. As soon as the detective started getting involved, that's when he pretty much laid no contact with any, or had no contact with anybody. Recalled Derek Schaefer, Brian's brother and last surviving immediate family member. I've always thought he definitely knows something, just won't come forward with it. He believes it is still possible that Brian is alive, and Florence knows where he might have gone. If Brian did take off somewhere, if that is the case, we just always had a strong feeling that Clint would possibly know that, he said. Schaefer's girlfriend at the time, Alexis Wagner, also thinks that Florence is withholding information. However, she believes that it's likely her former boyfriend is dead and did not run off. I can't imagine, she stated, he would have just done that. Now, in 2014, the Columbus police said that they were still receiving at least two tips a month on the case via the local Crime Stoppers hotline, though none of them have proven useful. The evidence in the case filed four boxes of files. Filled four boxes of files. One of the original investigators, Edwards, told Columbus Monthly that after the extensive review of the camera footage at the Ugly Tuna from the night Brian disappeared, which was intended to rule out the idea that Brian could have left in disguise, he could say with 100% certainty that Brian did not leave via the escalator. Police say that they have three theories about the case, but declined to discuss them, even generally, with the magazine. Between Brian's disappearance and his own death, Randy Schaefer joined the families of other missing adults in Ohio in lobbying the state legislature to pass a bill establishing a statewide protocol for such cases. At the time of Brian's disappeared, it was left up to individual departments how to handle the cases. And some parents felt that the investigations into their relatives' disappearance had suffered as a result. By the time Randy died, the bill had become law. So, a couple things don't add up. Okay. So let's run through a couple of them. Sorry, something stuck in my throat. But anyway, so him and his buddy go bar hopping. 1:30, 2 o'clock. Poof, he disappears. He's last seen on security camera talking to two girls, but then it shows him going back. And then that's it. They speculated that he was going back into the Ugly Tuna, but the camera doesn't show him going back. It just shows him going towards that way. So in all reality, you would think that he was going back in. Everyone did a lie detector test except his friend, which is the one that he went bar hopping with. So he refuses to take a lie detector test. Automatically, that's red flags. It shows that he's hiding something. So then they... I mean, if it's a red flag to me, and it's a red flag to all his family and girlfriend and whatnot, I mean, it shows right there he's hiding something. But that does not necessarily mean that he killed him or helped commit murder or was part of it or whatever. So what I think, I mean, this case is kind of weird on that. That's the thing. There's just poof, he disappeared. So it's possible that he had clothes, but nowhere in this investigation did they say that, or even on the camera itself, the security camera doesn't say that he had a book bag or anything. So if he did have a disguise, how in the hell did he, you know, where were these extra clothes? Did he have them on underneath the clothes that were shown that he had, that he went into the club with, or the bar with? Or did he kick someone's ass inside the bar and stripped them butt naked and wore their clothes? You know, so I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I just don't see it plausible. So, is it possible, since the camera itself did not see him go past, all it saw is him talking to those two girls and then walking back towards the entrance. Maybe he could have kept walking. So what I think, if his friend refused to take the lie detector test, now that's not necessarily saying that he killed him or did anything like that, but is it possible he's helping Brian by hiding? Maybe Brian and him were really close friends, and he told him, look, I just need to get away, you know, and I just need time, and can you help me cover this? I don't want you telling anyone. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe he told his friend to say that, basically lie, and when investigating, you know, it started getting heated, his, maybe that, I don't know, it's just something. I mean, I want to believe that part because I just thought about that, but if that's the case, if he wanted to run away and get away from everybody and have time for grieving, maybe it had nothing to do with grieving, maybe being in medical school in general, maybe it was just too much and he needed some time away, possible. But my thing is, if he was so in love with this girl and he had intentions of asking her to marry him, then why would you just poof, disappear? It don't make sense. But on the flip side, I kind of see some of their views. Like, they think he's alive. Maybe he still is, because nobody came up. There's no trace of anything. So your guess is about as good as mine on that, on this. So my bottom line is on this story, or on this case, is I think he could still be alive, because nothing else is coming up. There's no evidence. There's nothing. They don't have anything else to show, you know, oh, he was murdered or kidnapped or whatever. But what's weird is the part where his father passed away, and in the obituary, you know, he signed his name and then said his little quote. What was it? Sorry, Dad, or something like that. Hold on, let me look back through my notes and see exactly what it said. All right, so okay, here it is. So, all right, so his obituary ran online and a condolence book was posted. One with a signature in it said, "To Dad, love, Brian." And then it said U.S. Virgin Islands. And so, but the police later said that it was determined to be a hoax, because even after they pinged it or whatever, they found that this message didn't come from the Virgin Islands. It came from a town not too far or whatever. But that's not to say that it still wasn't him. Okay, so it still could have been him. Maybe he just said that and tried to throw people off. And, you know, maybe that's what his intentions. Maybe there's something seriously wrong with him. So, I don't know. I don't think that it's possible that he ran away. He didn't want to be bothered. Maybe he felt like he was a problem to his dad. I don't know what it is. But that's where the case stops. Which is sad either way, you know, because all that's left is the younger brother. So no one knows where Bron Schaefer is. Nothing's come up. His body hasn't come up. He hasn't come forward to say, look, I'm still alive. Just leave me the hell alone. But anyways, so that's it for that case. It was short. I mean, that's the thing. When you just disappear without a trace, there's really not much. You can only go on with what was investigated and what was said. But, you know, what we were talking about at the beginning of this case was about, what was it, the smiley face. Oh, where was it? What was it? It was like these, fuck, what was it called? The smiley face something. I might have to do some investigating into that. The smiley face serial killer. I'm going to see what I can dig up on that. I might bring that in sometime. Might do it this next week. I don't know. For people that originally listened to some of the very first podcasts and are just now coming back and joining me, you probably have noticed over time, over since last year when I first started the podcast, how the podcast itself is kind of flip-flop, but it stayed in the horror genre nonetheless. You know, one minute, you know, I did this, and then I did that, and then I tried to stay away from true crime and cold cases and all that, because I just thought, you know, everyone does it. But then I noticed when I did them, I had more listeners that would listen in or tune in to it because they were interested. So that's what this podcast is more on now these days compared to the beginning of this year or last year. Focus more on true crime, cold cases, missing persons cases. So that's what I guess you can officially call this. You know, I found my niche, I guess you can say. I guess you can officially call this a true crime podcast. Nonetheless, though, if you enjoyed this, make sure you follow the podcast. New episodes every single Sunday, unless noted otherwise. You can also follow the blog. If you're not really big into really listening that much, and if you're really big into reading, pretty much everything I stated today, word for word, except the end of the podcast when I was talking about my theories, you can read on my blog, and the link to that is down below. And is down in the comment or the comments, the down in the description, which is thedeadlawnpodcast.wordpress.com. And like I said, the link is down in the description. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm always on there. If you have anything that you're interested in listening, or you'd like me to find out more info on, you can follow me on Twitter at deadline_pod. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. Make sure to follow me on your favorite platforms that you like to listen to podcasts on. My name is Jay. See you next Sunday.